Number 57284, Schwartz versus Schwartz. Mr. Berkeley. And Mr. Dickerson. Welcome to Carson City, to both of you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, and litigants, I am Fred Berkeley. I am the attorney for Jonathan Schwartz as the personal representative of Milton I. Schwartz, who is the appellant. Mr. Schwartz is seated at counsel table. The last time we appeared before this court, at least on this case, was on October the 27th, 2009. After that hearing, it resulted in this court's opinion, dated March 4th, 2010. We prevailed on all of the issues that raised, but the case was remanded on one single issue. The only issue before the court today is the issue of lump sum alimony.
A well-written opinion, if I must say so.
I'm
myself.
Sorry?
A well-written opinion, if I must say so. Myself.
Beautifully written opinion, absolutely. In this opinion, this court clearly recognized that it will not substitute its judgment for that of the district court. You recognize that the district court has a better opportunity to observe the parties and evaluate the situation, a principle which is deeply rooted in Nevada law. You did conclude, however, that the lower court had failed to properly analyze whether lump sum should be awarded in this particular case. You asked for a full and proper analysis of whether lump sum alimony was appropriate, as the district court failed to take Milton Schwartz's health into account. You talked about three elements you wanted the district court to look at, which was the age, health, and life expectancy of Mr. Schwartz. On remand, the court was quite candid in admitting that it was in a quandary regarding the remand for the following reason. There's no dispute. Mr. Schwartz is 85 years old. There's not much analysis that can be done to that. He was 85 years old. Second, his health. The entire record, when you comb the entire trial record, all the trial record has in it regarding Milton's health, are the first four or five questions I asked Mr. Schwartz on the witness stand, which established that Milton said he was in good health, despite the fact that he did have end-stage renal disease. He was taking dialysis three times per week, and yet he was still working every single day. That is the entire amount of health testimony we have at trial or in this case. Finally, the third factor you asked the district court to look at was life expectancy. There was not one word in the trial about life expectancy, not a word. In order to be helpful to Judge Ritchie, I supplied a life expectancy chart when we went back on remand, and it was a life expectancy chart that was put out by the Social Security Administration. It was attached to my brief on remand, and it is in the record on appeal at 537. The actuarial table issued by the Social Security Department indicated that a man of Mr. Schwartz's age at the time of trial, 85 years, was expected to live 6.68 years was his life expectancy. 6.68 years. Your Honors will recall that Judge Ritchie, when the case was tried, ordered alimony for 7 years. So the only evidence of life expectancy was supplied by me on remand, and coincidentally turned out to be almost the exact same number that Judge Ritchie had picked after the time of trial.
Mr. Berkeley,
I'm sorry.
I am in error, but I thought at 539 of the record, the life expectancy table showed 5.56 years, not 6.68. Are you sure about that?
Well, unless I'm misreading the table, at 539, on the far left-hand part of the page, it says exact age, 85. And I believe you look all the way across to the final column, which says life expectancy, and I'm seeing 6.68.
Okay.
So I don't know how else to answer that, but at least on my copy, it's 6.68. I don't know where Your Honor's number comes from. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And even if it had said 5 point something, I don't know that it would necessarily change the argument. The point is, the only evidence
of life influence it. Because it could influence it.
It could, certainly.
You'd never, the life expectancy tables would not allow the award to be paid. The life expectancy of Mr. Schwartz would expire before the ordered payment.
Well, life expectancy is just
6.8 is closer than 5.56, but if it was 5.56, under that analysis, it would call into question ordering alimony for a 7-year period.
Fortunately, it's 6.68, so I don't have to meet that problem. It turned out to be almost the exact number that Judge Ritchie chose when he decided this case after trial, and I'm not here to suggest that Judge Ritchie necessarily looked at that table. In fact, with regard to the life expectancy table, no objection was ever made to it being attached to my brief on remand, nor was any objection when it was attached to the joint appendix. Judge Ritchie didn't address it in any way on remand, but it remains the only evidence of what Mr. Schwartz's life expectancy was. So here's why I think Judge Ritchie was in a quandary. On the one hand, he told us at the outset of the remand he will not accept any new evidence. He is not going to allow us to enlarge on the trial testimony. He's going to go strictly on what happened at the time of trial, which is fine. On the other hand, there is very scant evidence,
Why did he limit that, and did counsel object?
I did not object, nor did Ms. Gentile object, but he pronounced that this is the way the remand is going to go forward, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously. He said, I'm going to give you both the opportunity to file briefs, I'm going to give you the opportunity to come in and argue your positions, and then I'm going to make my decision.
Because I didn't see anything in the remand opinion that limited the trial judge's ability to take additional evidence.
And frankly, if you're asking me why I didn't object,
that's your right. I just wondered if anybody objected to the judge's parameters on remand.
No one objected to the judge's parameters. I was happy with and I was satisfied with, we're going to stick with the trial transcript, and anything that happened after the trial will not be considered. Which brings me to the very very significant issue of this. Judge Ritchie not only considered the fact that Milton died 7 months after the trial, he made that the linchpin of his decision. I put in my appellant brief a number of remarks where he out and out said, and he was very candid, he said, and I'm quoting here, Mr. Schwartz's death was the reason why this court is concluding that the award is illusory. And it is clear in my mind that's why the Supreme Court sent it back to me to consider whether it was illusory.
On that point, where in the opinion does the district court judge get that? Where in the opinion?
Where in, Your Honors, in the first opinion? I don't know where he is.
Does the fact of Mr. Schwartz's death form a basis for reevaluating this issue?
I don't know where Judge Ritchie got that idea, if that's what you're asking me. I think Judge Ritchie was required under your decision to take another look and to make sure he was considering the three factors that Your Honors put in your first decision. Instead, what he did was he said, look, the elephant in the room, and that's his phrase, and it made its way into his decision. The elephant in the room is the fact that Mr. Schwartz died. Because Mr. Schwartz died, my award was illusory, and since my award was illusory, I think the Supreme Court really wanted me to give her lump sum alimony, and therefore, based on his death, I'm giving lump sum alimony. Those were his remarks. That was not dicta. All of that is in his decision.
So you're saying he effectively disregarded this court's remitter or mandate when it remanded for a determination according to the factors. He took it as established that the award was illusory by virtue of the post hoc fact of Mr. Schwartz's death.
That is what I'm saying. He did not perform the analysis that you had talked about in your original decision. He basically decided, and my brief is full of quotes right from Judge Ritchie and from his decision, saying, since Mr. Schwartz died, I've got to give lump sum alimony. Which would mean that whether Mr. Schwartz were 85 or 45, or whether he was in good health or poor health, or regardless of what his life expectancy was, if Mr. Schwartz had been 45 years old and he died, under the reasoning that Judge Ritchie came up with, it would have been an illusory award, and it would have been, and he would have had to impose a lump sum alimony. That would change the law of alimony considerably. I mean, everybody who, every obligor might as well, you know, or person, I'm sorry, every obligee might as well take an appeal, because in case the obligor dies, you're going to get a lump sum alimony award.
Or they could come in under Rule 60B and move to vacate.
Well, but I don't. But I don't think that's the law in any jurisdiction that I've been able to find. This is especially a dangerous precedent in view of the court's specific findings that I want to remind you of regarding need. In the respondent's brief, she brings up a couple of times the fact that Abigail Schwartz needed this alimony, whether it be by periodic payments or whether it be in terms of a lump sum. The specific findings of Judge Ritchie at trial were absolutely the opposite. He held in his decree, this court concludes that Abigail Schwartz's earning potential and her passive income is more than sufficient to meet her monthly needs. Again, as the court stated above, if actual needs and ability to pay were the only consideration, spousal support would be denied. And I think in maybe the most telling quote right out of his decree, because what Judge Ritchie was being asked, well, you've got to go back and consider what the death of Milton Schwartz, what the significance of that would be. What happens if Mr. Schwartz dies before the 7 years runs? In his decree, Judge Ritchie did consider that. He said, and I quote, the death of Milton Schwartz may reduce the level of extravagance of her lifestyle, but it will not threaten her ability to meet her needs. Judge Ritchie obviously considered the effect that Mr. Schwartz's death would have on the alimony award and concluded it would not affect Abigail's ability to meet her needs.
But he didn't consider the potential illusory nature of the award based on his life expectancy.
I don't think he did. I think based on his death, not his life expectancy.
I'm talking about in the original decree.
In the original decree, he considered that Mr. Schwartz might die before the 7 years would run out and concluded that even if Mr. Schwartz were to die, Mr. Schwartz, who is left with $2.6 million in cash and another $1 million in assets, had more than sufficient assets to support herself, did not need to have this alimony, and the only thing that would be affected is the extravagance of her lifestyle. Remember, in the decree, Judge Ritchie made a very thorough analysis and went through and even did a budget for what reasonable expenses for Abigail would be. He gave her things like $2,000, this is in the record, $2,000 a month for personal care. Hair and nails, $2,000 per month is what Judge Ritchie allowed her. He was very generous in his award to Abigail Schwartz. In considering Milton's age and Milton's life expectancy and Milton's health, he said, even if he should die within the 7 years, the death of Milton Schwartz may reduce her extravagance, but she still has more than adequate ability to meet all of her financial needs.
Perhaps we're not communicating, Mr. Berkeley. I do not recall the original decree analyzing Mr. Schwartz, the alimony in the context of Mr. Schwartz's life expectancy or his then health.
I'm sorry, you're right, I don't understand the question.
I don't believe the original decree made any analysis of the award and its potential illusory nature, given the factors of his age, life expectancy, and then health.
Okay, I will accept that, and that's the basis of your first
And that was the
opinion.
Purpose of the remand.
And
take those things into consideration, and then tell us whether it changes anything.
And had the judge focused on age, and had he focused on health, and had he focused on life expectancy, we wouldn't be here with this appeal. Judge Ritchie told us.
So you believe the order would have come out the same way?
I do. I think, I mean, I tried as best as my advocacy skills would allow me to remind him that he had taken those things into consideration, There was very scant evidence in the record of things like health and of life expectancy, so he certainly couldn't make those up. But he had taken into consideration Milton's health. I mean, he was 85 years old. Judge Ritchie observed that. He observed the fact that, that he had some hearing problems at trial and had to use, a hearing aid. But in terms of evidence in the record which would allow him to reverse himself, there just wasn't any. And Judge Ritchie decided that the death of Milton Schwartz is the reason that you sent it back to him. And in trying to get to the decision that he thought this court wanted him to come to, he decided to rely on Milton Schwartz's death. And as a precedent, that would be very dangerous in my estimation and cannot be used. It would also run contrary, and I see my time is up, and it's in my brief. There's also a line of authority based on the Hannon versus Hannon case, which tells us that in a case like this where the judge made a specific finding that the premarital agreement, which had been upheld, waived any right that Abigail would have at Milton's estate, a award of lump sum alimony in this case would be in derogation of the premarital agreement. And in Hannon versus Hannon, the court said, we can't do it. In order to have the premarital agreement and have its full effect, alimony during the lifetime was certainly okay, but lump sum alimony being paid by the estate, which had already been waived by Abigail in this case, would not be allowed. And it's all in my brief, so I won't take any more of
this. I have a question to follow up on that point. On the inconsistency with the premarital agreement, when did you first assert as an argument against lump sum alimony that to award such alimony would in effect end run the premarital agreement?
I did not assert that until I did my opening brief.
On this appeal? So it was not argued before the district court?
It was not argued before the district court. In respondent's brief, they say I had to have brought, I should have appealed the original decree. We won that issue at trial.
So why would you?
There was no reason for me to appeal that. Obviously I must be candid with the court. I did not cite the Hannon case. Frankly, I hadn't even seen that Hannon case until this briefing, and the first time it did appear is in this brief. I don't think that means you can't take it into consideration, but that is the fact of the matter.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Dickerson.
May it please the court. Mr. Berkley, my name is Bob Dickerson, and I have the pleasure of representing Abigail Schwartz, who's in the courtroom here today. It's also a pleasure appearing here before this court. I don't get an opportunity to do it too often. 2.5 years ago, approximately, is the last time I've been here, and it was on this case. It seems like every other case I have seems to get settled at the settlement judge level, but this one just can't do it. Looking back, this court set out certain facts in its original decision, and as the court's aware, we're dealing with a 14-year marriage. The divorce in this case occurred 2 days shy of the 14th anniversary. In its decision, this court, Justice Cherry, noted that Milton and Abigail Schwartz met in May of 1992. At the time of their marriage, Abigail was a registered nurse practicing in Las Vegas. Abigail stopped working as a registered nurse at Milton's request in order for the couple to be able to travel. Abigail stuck with this gentleman for the entire 14 years that they lived together prior to him filing for divorce. I believe it was in March of 07, or of 2007. She was a devoted wife. She took care of him, took care of his health issues, and we're dealing with a 14-year marriage, and we're looking at the fairness and the equity of an award of alimony in this case. The initial decision of the of Judge Ritchie awarded periodic alimony in the amount of $5,000 for 7 years. Now, pursuant to statute, because it was termed periodic alimony, it was determined upon his death. Now, the first appeal then was initiated. That decision was in, as I recall, was January of 2007 when Judge Ritchie issued his decision. Within the required 30-day period, we filed our notice of appeal. And we actually participated in a Supreme Court settlement conference, which Mr. Schwartz was present at. Mr. Schwartz passed away in August of 2007 during the pendency of the appeal before the Supreme Court. At that point in time that he passed away, he had made 7 payments of the alimony, the $5,000 a month. And the issue came before this court. The issue of alimony, I do want to point out, has always, the issue of lump sum alimony has always been, from the start of this case, an issue before the court, before the district court. In her answer to the complaint for divorce and her counterclaim, which is part of the record of appeal starting at page 5, Abigail, in her counterclaim, alleges such things as, Abigail acted as Milton's wife, companion, partner, and medical service provider since the party's marriage. When the parties married, Milton was 71 years old and had several medical problems. Milton currently is of the advanced age of 85 years and continues to suffer from several medical problems that need regular attention. Abigail is a registered nurse and has continually provided Milton with the loving care and medical attention that he needed from the time the parties married until Milton purportedly decided he wanted a divorce in March of 2006. In our prayer that's set out in that pleading, we specifically asked the court for an award of alimony in a lump sum due to the advanced age of Milton in the event this court grants the divorce requested by Milton, and that such award is incident to any divorce that may be granted by the court. Now, a review of that pleading, you'll see that Abigail did not want a divorce. It was her position that that Milton Schwartz was not competent to get a divorce, and that he was being pushed into this divorce by his son Jonathan, who is here in the courtroom today. The court disagreed with us on that and held that he was competent and that he did state sufficient grounds for a divorce, and he granted him the divorce. And the issues at that first appeal that came before this court were primarily two. I raised the issue that pursuant to the post-nuptial agreement, and there were several post-nuptial agreements, as your honors will recall, pursuant to one of those post-nuptial agreements, Milton Schwartz was to provide Abigail and make her the owner of a $4 million life insurance policy in which she would be the beneficiary. Our position at trial and our position before this court on that contract issue was that he breached his contract and that she was entitled, it was a vested property right, and she was entitled to that $4 million policy. The district court disagreed with us, and this court disagreed with us. The second issue that was raised on appeal was the issue of the periodic alimony. And it was our position that it should have been lump sum, as we argued under the Daniels versus Baker case. And we continue to argue that. Those were the issues. And we were dealing with the contract issues that were covered by the agreements, and we were dealing with alimony issues that, as your honors are aware, it's a creature of statute. And there was no provision in any premarital agreement, as Judge Ritchie found, that where she waived alimony. So the argument, as you notice, that's being raised for the first time on this appeal was never raised, notwithstanding the fact that that was an issue from day one. It was never raised at the district court level, and quite frankly, that argument truly is frivolous because we're talking about two different things that were found. The contracts dealt with contract rights. There was no waiver of alimony, and Judge Rich's award of alimony was proper, and there is no violation of any agreement. I also know that issue is raised, and you don't even have the benefit of having this premarital agreement before you that counsel claims precludes the award of alimony. So really, the issue that we have here is, under the directions of this court, and if I just may read what this court directed Judge Ritchie to do. And this is from the Nevada Advance Opinion. It's 126, Nevada Advance Opinion 8, starting at page 3. This court said, however, while the district court did not abuse its discretion in the amount of alimony, we conclude that the court failed to properly analyze the alimony, whether the alimony should be awarded in a lump sum. The district court relied on our holding in Daniel versus Baker, with its citation, in denying Abigail's request for lump sum alimony. In Daniel, we held that the district court had abused its discretion in failing to award the wife lump sum alimony because she had no earning potential and a longer life expectancy, while the husband had substantial wealth, was in poor health, and a lump sum alimony award would not have depleted his assets. This court went on. We conclude that the district court abused its discretion in failing to do a full and proper analysis of whether lump sum alimony was appropriate in this case, as the district court did not take Milton's health into account. Milton testified at trial, at which time he was 85 years old and Abigail was 55 years old, that he had end-stage kidney disease, was on dialysis three times a week, and was in poor health. The district court should have taken Milton's poor health into account when making its determination of whether a lump sum alimony award would have been proper in this case. Now, the court then goes on and gives instructions to all the district courts in the state. You write, we thus hold that a district court should assess not only age disparity, as set forth in Daniel, but also whether the life expectancy of the payer will make a non-lump sum award of alimony illusory. Along with the analysis set out in Daniel, the age and health of the payer should be taken into consideration when undertaking an analysis of whether lump sum alimony is appropriate. Specifically, a district court should look at the life expectancy of the payer at the time of making the alimony determination and to take into account the payer's medical condition and prospects for healthy living. This analysis will help avoid an illusory alimony award when a payer is known to be terminally ill or known to have low prospects for continued healthy living, since it will allow the payee to continue to receive alimony in a manner that will assure they are supported past the payer's death. As such, we remand this case back to the district court to complete its analysis of whether a lump sum alimony award is appropriate in this case, taking into account Milton's age, health, and life expectancy in relation to the length of the alimony award. Now, I submit to you that notwithstanding what Mr. Berkley has told you, it is set out in Judge Ritchie's decision. Judge Ritchie makes the following specific findings. The court finds it was obvious in this case that plaintiff was older, had trouble hearing, had renal disease, and was taking dialysis, but there was no evidence that he was going to die a week later, 5 months later, or 5 years later. Obviously, there could be no evidence presented at a time of trial as when an individual is going to die. You look to his age, you look to his health, and this man, notwithstanding any life expectancy schedules that have been thrown out, those life expectancy tables deal with a healthy individual, not a man in third stage renal disease, with third stage renal disease. Judge Ritchie went on. He says, the court further finds that in the Supreme Court decision, there was no finding that there was an abuse of discretion on the amount of alimony it awarded to defendant. However, the Supreme Court remanded the matter back to this court to determine whether the lump sum alimony should be paid regardless of payer's death. Regardless of payer's death. And that means whether the balance that was unpaid because of his death should have been awarded as a lump sum. This court finds it has two options. To either find that its original decision, the court evaluated and analyzed the factors and properly made the alimony statutory, or this court, in its analysis of Daniel versus Baker, should have been compelled to say the alimony should have been paid as a just and equitable lump sum award by him without regard to his life expectancy and to be paid regardless of plaintiff's death. In its decision, the Supreme Court directed this court to assess the age and health of the payer when determining whether lump sum is appropriate. This court finds that we had scant evidence concerning life expectancy, but we could talk about what we observed or what could be inferred by his age and his renal disease and kidney dialysis. The court concludes with the following finding. This court finds that after a full and proper analysis, it should have given consideration to plaintiff's health, age, and life expectancy, and that a more equitable outcome is to make the support award a lump sum of the amount and duration. Most of the payments adjudicated in this award are not even due. The appropriate decision in this case is to determine that the amount of alimony award that was supposed, that was supported by all the findings and conclusions, should be lump sum. The net effect of this is that plaintiff should get credit for what he paid prior to this, his death, and the balance be paid by his estate. Accordingly, in complying with the Supreme Court's directives and analyzing the issue again, taking into consideration the evidence and finding that the court and the findings that the court made at the time of trial, the alimony award of $5,000 a month for a period of 7 years should have been awarded as lump sum. And the court further concludes, further, this court finds that making the alimony award a periodic award, it is illusory. However, by making the lump sum award, it no longer is illusory. With that, the district court awarded, made a lump sum alimony award of $385,000. Now let's analyze that. The court found we have a 14-year marriage. Milton Schwartz, net worth at the time of the trial, just 7 months prior to his death, $49 million. And the court awards $385,000 as a lump sum award, and that's why we're before this court. Sole issue then, really the sole issue before this court, is whether Judge Ritchie abused his discretion in making that award. And I respectfully submit to you that he truly could not possibly have abused his discretion, and that should not be disrupted. $385,000 is 0.0078 of Milton Schwartz's net worth. For every dollar that Milton Schwartz has, that is less than three quarters, it's approximately three quarters of a penny. And that's what was awarded, and that's why we're here on appeal. I addressed the issue with respect to the final issue that was raised. We talked about life expectancy. The only other thing I would like to address is Mr. Berkeley's comments on need. As this court knows, need is not the basis of alimony. Need is considered. But as Judge Ritchie found in his original decision, and as this court has held on several times in the Heim case and the Springer case, alimony is to put the disadvantaged spouse to make sure that he or she is able to live as nearly as fairly possible to the station in life that she enjoyed before the divorce for the rest of her life or until she remarries or her financial circumstances substantially improve. Judge Ritchie made that analysis in his original findings and conclusions, found that $5,000 a month was needed by Abigail in order for her to continue with the lifestyle that she had grown accustomed to. And as he specifically pointed out, the court concludes that it should exercise discretion to award spousal support to Abigail, which will allow her to maintain a lifestyle that could include travel, shopping, and dining out. And for that reason,
go ahead and finish your thought, Mr. Cooley.
For that reason, the court award made the alimony award. Thank you.
Ms. Berkeley, I'll give you 2 minutes to for rebuttal.
The only thing that I would really point out to the court is the one thing that Mr. Dickerson did not address is the fact that Judge Ritchie specifically told us four or five or six different times during the course of his decision that Milton Schwartz's death is the reason that I am reversing my earlier decision. He made death the linchpin of his decision. He didn't go through the analysis, at least our position is he didn't analyze these three things. Mr. Dickerson didn't speak to those issues. Mr. Dickerson was not asked, well, didn't Judge Ritchie think that because Milton died, the award was illusory? And isn't the fact that Milton died the sole reason that he reversed this thing? This is what he told us. This is in his decision. This is in his findings, that since Milton Schwartz died, my award is illusory, and I have to give it a lump sum. That was never addressed by Mr. Dickerson.
But could you tell me why you think what analysis he should have given? What did you ask Judge Ritchie to analyze, taking death off the table, putting it to one side because it postdated the determination? In light of the court's decision, what did you offer up for him to analyze?
The only things that the court's first decision asked him to analyze were age, and there's not much to analyze with age. Age is age. I offer life expectancy tables, and that is the only evidence that we have of what the life expectancy was. There was no medical testimony. There were no doctors. Miss Abigail is a registered nurse since for at least the last 25, 30 years, yet she made no testimony whatsoever with regard to Mr. Schwartz's medical condition.
So your case was essentially that periodic alimony is the norm, and there was no showing to justify lump sum alimony, and on this record you should stand by your original determination. Is that what you argued to Judge Ritchie on the remand?
I would say, in essence, yes. I mean, I think what this court wanted was some reassurance, and again, I don't want to get into all the messages and the coding and the things that were gotten into in the briefing, that what the message was in the first decision. What I asked Judge Ritchie to do was to reassure this court and tell this court, yes, I did take into consideration age. I did take into consideration Mr. Schwartz's health on the limited amount of evidence I had on his health. And I did take into consideration his life expectancy, which turned out to be almost exactly what I awarded, which was 7 years. Judge Ritchie told us he was not going to consider anything that happened after the trial. And yet he told us, yet I am not only am I going to consider the death, but I am going to be, because of Milton's death, that's the reason the case was remanded. That's the reason that I am reversing, and that is the reason why this is illusory. He told us that on the record, and it's in his decision. Death cannot be the linchpin of this decision. Whether Milton had lived, as in the quote that Mr. Dickerson read, whether he died 5 days later or 5 months later or 10 years later, I think he had to go back and decide the case as if it were a trial. By taking into consideration something that happened 7 months post-trial, I think he disregarded your decision.
Thank you, Mr. Perfer. Thanks to both Mr. Dickerson and Mr. Berkeley for their argument and briefs in this matter.
Thank you very much.
This matter will stand submitted.